Hello and welcome to 433 with your host Gregory Gann on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. Tonight we have a very special show. We'll be talking about an exciting multidisciplinary production, Music from the New Wilderness, presented by Western Front New Music and happening at the Vancouver Cultural Center, the Culch, between February 11th and the 15th. So this is going to be 4 days, 6 artists working in collaboration. And they will explore the relationship between music, environment, oral history, and field recordings. It will feature performances, electroacoustic narratives, art, and even a string quartet. Two of the people that will be presenting their work are here with me tonight. They are Jennifer Schein joining us in the studio, and Adam Basanta joining us over the phone from Montreal. So welcome to the program, Adam and Jennifer.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey, Jenny.
Hey, Adam.
How's it going?
Great.
Well, there you go, a long-distance reunion right here.
Exactly.
So let me introduce Adam and Jennifer because they have, to me, pretty intimidating biographies. I hope that you'll get to appreciate their full splendor. So Adam Basanta is a multiple award-winning composer and media artist who has his feet firmly planted in various composition genres, including electroacoustic, acoustic, and mixed composition, as well as interactive and audiovisual performances. Amongst an array of international prizes, he has been awarded the first prize in the student category of Metamorphose in 2010 in Belgium, and the John Weinzweig Grand Prize for Best Composition in the SOCAN Foundation for Young Composers. Adam has held artist residencies in Stockholm, the U.S., and Spain. He has several journal publications behind him. He presented his work in conferences and artist talks, and he's currently teaching digital music and interactive sound art at Dawson College in Montreal. Thus, he joins us over the phone, long distance from Montreal. So welcome, Adam.
Thanks.
And now, well, now for Jennifer. Jennifer is an award-winning sound artist, researcher, and communication specialist with a master's in the School of Communication at Simon Fraser University. Her work explores the oral and oral heritage of British Columbia's coastal communities. She has spent the last few years working with pioneer Billy Proctor and audio recording the sounds and stories of the Broughton Archipelago. It's a group of islands that's just along the Midwest coast of BC. Her research there resulted in an award-winning documentary film called Listening to a Sense of Place, co-created with Greg Crompton. The film received Best Student Prize at the International Society for Ethnobiology in France, the Best Documentary Short Film and Audience Choice Award at the Vancouver Short Film Festival. Jennifer has also published with Sensory Studies and Soundscape, the Journal for Acoustic Ecology. Now, as I mentioned earlier, Jennifer has worked with an elder in the community, Billy Proctor, recording sounds of his everyday life. And in fact, these are some of the sounds that we're hearing right now behind my voice. And so by recording these sounds, it allowed him, and in turn, listeners of these recordings, to reflect on how his community transforms. And Jennifer, I really liked how sound became an entry point for you and your informant to elicit memories of the past, and thus to gain both a kind of sense of place and a sense of identity. I was wondering if I can ask you, do sounds of home evoke these same kind of feelings? What kind of sounds do you remember from your childhood, for example?
Well, that's a good question. I do think sounds of home evoke... What specifically is your question?
Well, basically, you know, in chatting with Billy Proctor, there seems to be a really strong connection between a community and a sense of place. I was wondering if there is a kind of sense of place that when you think about, your own sounds from your basically home, how do they sound? What do they sort of convey to you?
I think I grew up on the North Shore of Vancouver. So I grew up next to the mountains the forest and the ocean, and I think that allowed a certain type of listening that can really only happen away from the sounds of the city. So I've been sort of, connected to the nature scape, I guess, or just the wilderness, and those are my sounds of home. And maybe the Broughton is a bigger, more expansive experience of the nature than nature scape than Vancouver.
And I wanted to ask Adam as well. Now, you're currently living between Montreal and Vancouver. Has the setting of one city or another impacted the way that you compose?
I'm sure it has. I didn't grow up in Vancouver, so I guess when I moved there kind of as a young teenager, I didn't necessarily pay that much attention to sound, but as I was studying at Simon Fraser University, of course there were this attention to the sounds of the natural world that was something that I was definitely inspired by, and to try to look at these sounds or to listen to these sounds as if they're a composition, that was a groundbreaking moment for me. Now that I've been in Montreal for just a bit over 3 years, and kind of back and forth occasionally, I wouldn't really say that I'm particularly. I always used a lot of sounds of the urban environment in my compositional work, even when I lived in Vancouver. Maybe it's a little bit more the case in Montreal. I've definitely. I've become more interested in sounds that are maybe a little bit less organic and a little bit more glitchy, aesthetics of failure types of sounds. I don't know if that's really because of the city soundscape or just the community of artists, a lot of composers, a lot of sound artists that are working here that maybe I picked that up from, but that was a bit of a change for me.
Yeah, and then maybe talking about the interaction of sound and space or place even, I'm wondering, where do you get your inspiration? So does a specific place inspire you to compose about it, or is it the opposite? Do compositions set the tone for the place?
I think each piece is different for me. So sometimes I'm inspired by a certain sound, kind of working outwards from the material of the sound material itself into sort of a composed form. But other time it's coming more from a concept and kind of working top down from this idea of what I want to do. Or other times it can be kind of a formal shape or idea that kind of guides the development of material. And of course there are places that that I really enjoy and I find them sonically interesting. That doesn't necessarily mean that I'm going to compose something about them. But occasionally that happens, of course.
Maybe I can ask Jennifer, what kind of sounds, we're talking specifically about a collaboration between electroacoustic composition, a vocalist, and Jennifer's field recordings from the Broughton Archipelago. And these three voices interact with one another. So basically I'm wondering, what kind of sounds do you remember experiencing on your trips to the Broughton Archipelago?
Well, I guess I don't remember necessarily right away sounds, but I guess it's more of a listening stance that the Broughton allowed me to have when I was there. It was this expansion, my ears sort of stretching outward, and I was able to really open up, maybe, my listening, instead of being in, I don't want to create a dichotomy of the city, urban versus wilderness, but that's sort of what it feels like when you go to the Broughton. It's really expansive, and your ears are allowed to search for sounds instead of feeling sort of shut around, shut down because of a lot of noise around you, which can also be aesthetically pleasing, but that's sort of how I dealt with living in Vancouver versus going to the Broughton.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess it's a listening stance up there, and finding these minute details of a place and softer sounds, and also sounds become really meaningful, like the airplane, which is a sound here that happens, the sea, you know, the airplanes are going by us all the time. And in the Broughton, you know, they come by when there's mail once a week. Or, you know, they'll drop people off, or maybe they need to take someone away. So those sounds, every sound, I think, carries a particular meaning, and so you're listening more,
mm-hmm.
I find.
Now, maybe I can ask this from Adam. Having only briefly visited the Broughton Archipelago as part of this project, what were some of the surprises in hearing this kind of contrast maybe between the city and the wilderness? And maybe I can extend on that question and ask, what are the challenges of composing music about a place with which you're not necessarily intimately familiar?
Mm-hmm. That's a great question. I mean, you know, to address the first part, I mean, my experience of the Broughton, which was about 7 or 8 days, I think, of being there, you know, I felt, I mean, obviously there's this, you know, sense of quiet that you don't get in the city, where you're almost surprised by the lack of sound. Like, you kind of have to listen hard to hear, you know, the leaves rustling or whatever, the waves lapping, something like that. But at the same time, I did find the first few days that I was there that this kind of silence was quite imposing in a way. You know, a lot of times people talk about it, you know, in terms of like a very relaxing, or, you know, getting away from the noise of the city. For me, there was something very imposing about the silence that kind of, you know, it was just there quite often. On the other hand, I was really surprised by how many motor sounds I heard. And because this is a place that's kind of off the grid, you need to generate your own electricity with a generator, you know, a boat, with, you know, gasoline and engines. That's the mode of transportation. So, so at the same time during the day, there would be actually a lot of sounds that you wouldn't associate with, you know, kind of the romantic ideal of the wilderness. So that was a surprise. Both the extreme silence and the, you know, what we would call a noise as opposed to a sound. You know, those were both surprising. I mean, in terms of composing music about a place, or about a place that you're not intimately familiar with, I think that there's a basic difficulty with the idea of writing a piece about a place, because I don't really feel like, at least that I'm able to create kind of an objective, you know, account of a place in a piece of music, and I'm not particularly interested in the idea of representation of a soundscape in the sense that we can think of a landscape painting, you know, representing kind of more or less from an objective perspective, where the painter isn't included in the picture. My way into this project was really to address that difficulty and to make that part of the piece. And for me, a lot of my work that involves recordings, sound recordings of places, whether it's the Broughton or other places I've been, there's a real difference between listening in that place and recording the place and listening to it later. And I'm sure, you know, Jenny probably has, you know, something to say about that as well. But for me, there's something there are two very different experiences, because when I listen to a recording that I've made in a place, it's usually at least a few months after the fact, there's a paleness to it, and there is kind of, you know, it's a trace on a medium, on a membrane, you know, but it's not the real thing, and I'm listening to myself listening to that sound in the place 6 months ago. It's a very different experience. It has a lot to do with memory rather than kind of sensing your immediate environment. So writing a piece about a place with, you know, especially from an electroacoustic point of view, with sounds that you may or may not recognize, and having this time difference and having the paleness of the recorded medium as opposed to the experience in the moment that you experienced it, these are all, you know, very, very significant difficulties, for me at least. But that's I don't mean to sound like it's not worth doing it. It's worth doing it because it's difficult. But I don't know if this is an answer to the question, how to write a piece about a place. For me, it's about the struggle of doing that, because there is something, there's something quite difficult about it.
And Jennifer, would you agree? Do you feel a difference between listening to a place and recording it?
Yeah, absolutely, I do. I wanted to actually, Adam. We had that conversation when we were in the Broughton about, I think this is just so fascinating, about, I remember you feeling sort of imposed upon in the Broughton a little bit with, you know, the silence, right? And and then I felt that same sort of feeling in Montreal when I came to visit you.
Right.
So, yeah, it is interesting. I think that's, I mean, for me, that's also part of when you're in that silence, or you're in a place where you can actually listen and you can slow down, and then you have to, you can, you know, we talked about this as well, you can't really busy yourself, right? Or you have to be with yourself in that moment. There's no Twitter account, there's no wireless internet, so you're there listening, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and listening on a different time scale as well, I think, is something that we really talked about a lot. I mean, things move at a very different pace.
Oh my gosh,
than they do in a city. And it's, you feel that almost instantly. I mean, in the first day, you can really feel that the rhythms of life are different. It's not that there's a lot of things to do. You know, you need to fix your boat and you know, take care of all these things, and you're busy all day, but at the same time, there is this feeling that the cycles of life are a bit slower.
Yeah, even that's why I love recording Billy's voice, because it reflects that area so much. His pace and his rhythms and the inflections of his speech. They're like this musical part of the Broughton Archipelago, and you do have to sit with it, with his voice, and listen in this slower way, you know, than like an elder, an old timer, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, even just the idea of telling stories is, I mean, sure, you tell stories, you know, wherever you live, but it has a different function and it has a different pacing when you're in a very remote place.
Yeah.
I mean, it's one of the things that you do, because you don't have internet or radio or TV or whatever, is, you know, you're listening to one another's stories. It was really interesting for me, actually, to observe that part of it.
So maybe we can give our listeners a little bit of an experience like this. Jennifer, is there anything from your sound recordings that you'd perhaps like to play on air for us?
Sure. This one is a little segment of Billy chopping wood and talking about the seasons and the slower pace, and you know, there's not much to do in the Broughton. When you're there, it feels like you are so busy, and all you've done maybe is gotten dinner ready. But you're chopping your wood, you're fixing your boat, you're doing what you need to do to have a daily life there. And Billy has this amazing, Billy has this amazing woodshed. And anyways, I'll let the piece speak for itself.
So this is Conversations with Billy Proctor. We will be back in about 3.5 minutes to resume our conversation with Jennifer Shine and Adam Basanta.
I just love splitting wood, Jesus. I use this old axe for the last 45 years or more. I always tell people you get hot from it twice. When it's tough, you work up a sweat splitting it. Then get hot from it when you burn it.
Yeah, why do you like splitting wood so much?
Hey?
Why do you like it?
I always love splitting wood.
You want to go split some wood?
Yeah, let's split some wood.
Let's split some wood.
That'd be pretty hard to explain in a story, even. How to split wood.
Yeah, what would you say?
Hey?
What would you say?
Yeah, where would you start? Pretty near everybody tries to split the block in half first. That'll break your heart.
Hey, Billy? If you were going to explain your woodshed to someone, how would you describe it?
Full. Everybody laughs at my woodshed. But it's like a security blanket, my God. You know, if you're going to get sick or anything, you're always going to have lots of wood to keep you warm.
How many years' supply do you think you have in there?
Oh, about 6. I'm going to keep it full until I can't split wood anymore. And then when I get too old and decrepit for that, I'll have enough to last me till I die, probably. They're making fun of me in my big wood pile. Pretty tough, this old bugger, but it's sure beautiful wood. God, it was tough. But dandy wood, Jesus.
The old timers would have a special float house for wood?
Yeah, just a float with a roof, no walls. So the wind could blow through it and dry the wood good. Yeah, everybody had a wood float. Because when you were cooking with wood, which all of them were, they had to keep a year's supply ahead to make
that's
it dry.
Resin. You can start a fire with that, just put a match to it.
Because they all used fresh green trees.
Oh yeah, I'd like to have a contest. I don't think anybody could beat me splitting wood. I've been splitting it since I was 8 years old.
Why do you like chopping wood?
Yeah, I don't know. Great satisfaction. You know, it's going to keep you nice and warm. The tougher it is, the better I like it.
Wow. Well, that was Conversations with Billy Proctor. A conversation recorded by Jennifer Shine. So, Jennifer, in your work, you certainly move beyond an art medium, beyond what, you know, academics might term musique concrète, and you navigate through these sounds that are very much connected to people and places. And moreover, these are people and places that are in transformation, impacted by industry, deforestation, systemic economic and social inequality. I was wondering, maybe branching out on this question, do you consider yourself more of an artist with a social purpose, or perhaps an engaged ethnographer with an artistic side?
Well, first of all, I just love that Billy's voice is on the radio right now, and it makes me so happy, actually, just thinking of what he would say. I I'm not sure if I consider myself an artist first or an ethnographer. I guess I consider myself an ethnographer first. Can you repeat the question?
Well, I think that it certainly sounds that, and no pun intended, that you are conducting a kind of engaged anthropology, you know, and not necessarily a partisan anthropology, but an anthropology where you are very much invested in the future of the community. And so I wanted to sort of maybe get a sense of how you place yourself within the wider field and, sure. You know.
Well, I think before I do that, maybe the place itself needs to be described a little bit. So, the Broughton Archipelago is, as you said, located on the Midwest coast of BC. If you go to Port McNeill, then it's about a 45-minute boat ride away. And in this area, there are a whole bunch of beautiful islands. And there are also a lot of fish farms in this area. It's a contested site over the use of fish farms because there are many salmon runs that happen in that area that apparently are affected by the fish farms. And there's lots of multinational companies doing logging and deforestation, things like that. So I guess, you know, when you work in communities that are engaged directly, affected directly with resource extraction and who see what happened to, what happens to our resources, they're witnessing the changing world. We're in the city, and they're in these places seeing that the salmon aren't coming back. And they're seeing that logs are being logged into salmon streams, and they're watching fish farms being built. And so when you go to these places and you become friends with people who live there and you work closely with them, then I do feel like you have a responsibility to share their stories and share a message that they want other people to hear. So, yeah, if I'm an engaged ethnographer or an engaged artist...
You're
so
engaged, yeah, and that's, I guess, the important part. But I think for me, what's interesting is that your engagement carries forth in your sound recordings, right? I mean, from my experience in anthropology, our discipline often privileges the written word, right? To a lesser extent, we use some visual media, right? And that may be the legacy of Margaret Mead and Gregory Bateson some 60, 70 years ago. But sound as an exploration of place has had a much more limited presence. And so I'm wondering, within that sort of social component, within that responsibility to the community, how well has your, aim to convey what this transformation of this community experiences, how well has it been received so far?
Well, I think that sound is so exciting to work with because it has a possibility to transcend and go into public domains and, you know, become a composition or be in a film or go on radio. People can listen to it and engage with it, and it can be evocative in so many ways. So whether anthropologists or academics are using, you know, they're using other forms to engage people, but that's the exciting thing about working with recordings. I mean, Billy can speak for himself. He's a storyteller. All I have to do is, I mean, I see myself as part of the story now. Definitely, I'm not just an anthropologist who's gone in there and recorded Billy. These stories, they are his stories. But they came about because I listened to them, and in a particular way where he felt like he could share them, and in a way where we did, you know, we took tools from his museum. Billy Proctor has a museum, and we took tools out and into the real world, and in situ made them sound, and then his memories were evoked, and he had this rich way of, you know, explaining his life and how he used these tools and that to me can, that material has so many possibilities.
On that note, I wanted to play a few public service announcements, but we will be back shortly to speak with Adam and Jennifer about their upcoming work at the concert, music from the New Wilderness. Maybe this time I'll ask Adam a few more questions. We will be back in just about 2 minutes, and you're listening to 433, a program dedicated to new music, and now to sensory anthropology on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
I'm going to be around my vegetables. I'm going to chow down my vegetables. I love you most of all, my favorite vegetable.
Sprouts. It's your 75-cent coffee fix in the sub. It's your source for reasonably priced, creatively named stew and vegan brownies. It's your purveyor of bicycle-delivered local produce. It's also a place where volunteers can realize their vision of responsible business and where like-minded students can explore UBC's food systems. Hark! Sprouts is currently accepting applications for next year's executive board and is encouraging ambitious, creative, and disciplined students from all faculties and year levels to apply. Come by Sprouts in the sub-basement to learn more about our projects and how to get involved.
I tried to kick the ball, but my tinny flew right off. I'm red as a bee, 'cause I'm so embarrassed.
Are you not sure where to go on campus? Traveling late at night and afraid to go alone? Call SafeWalk, a free service where a co-ed team will take you anywhere you need to go on campus. Don't walk alone. For a walk, add SafeWalk to your phone. Call 604-822-5355. That's 604-822-5355. Alternatively, use a UBC Blue phone and ask for SafeWalk. Approach any SafeWalk team or drop by our office on the main floor of the sub across from the gallery lounge.
Because you're mine, I walk the line.
Okay, and we're back with Jennifer and Adam. Now, I wanted to ask Adam a few questions. Adam, in one of your pieces called Sound on Sound, you describe sound and gesture as inextricably linked, as the composer unwittingly becomes a kind of choreographer of gestures that produce specific sounds. In this piece, a small chamber orchestra acts, maybe you'll disagree with me, but seemingly haphazardly to the requests of the conductor. The musicians use extended techniques, sometimes even lay their instruments down, slam chairs, get up and walk around. And in your liner notes, you describe this as a kind of severance of the relationship between gesture and sound. And in uncoupling this relationship, you're suggesting that you raise new possibilities of communication. So maybe to tie this back into what we're talking about, which is music from the New Wilderness, the Broughton Archipelago, I was wondering, has working with Jennifer, where you make use of existing sounds and narratives from another place, allowed you to explore these new possibilities of communication?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, in the sense that I'm very interested in different ways of listening or different modes of listening. So if we're listening to a certain sound, we can maybe kind of concentrate on it and just listen to the timbre, just really engage with the sensual kind of aspect of the sound. Of course, when we hear a sound that we recognize, like let's say, you know, a garbage truck, you know, picking up garbage in back alley or something. Yes, we hear the sound, but we also know that something made this sound, and maybe we recognize it, or maybe we find it familiar, or maybe we even remember something related to this sound. And then, of course, when we hear text, then we're kind of more concentrated on the meaning. What is this person trying to say? You know, unless the word is repeated over and over. If we repeat a single word over and over and over again, you know, the meaning starts to disappear, and we kind of wonder, you know, if we're saying it right. So I'm really interested in how these different modes of listening can coexist in one listening experience. So that's not really communication as much as I'm trying to tease people into listening in different ways, sequentially or simultaneously, and in this way, in this particular piece that will be played in Vancouver in a week, I'm specifically using kind of more sonic material that is more abstract, that we would concentrate on the timbre, sounds that are recognizable from the natural environment, and text. And I'm trying to kind of toy around with the way that they are used to kind of sequence the way that people are listening. And especially the use of text is a bit of... it was a bit of an experiment this time because I don't usually work with text. I've done it once or twice. And so I tried to kind of have the text as an element in the piece, which you know, communicates a bit of a narrative and it gives you a sense of kind of characters inside this sonic world. But at the same time, to try and have the text kind of comment on what's going to happen or what has happened before, and kind of work in a meta level in a way. And I don't think that's necessarily apparent in the first listen, but I'm really interested in creating a very thick semantic web in a way where if you were listening to the piece a few times, you could listen to it in different ways, and maybe you could catch some of these relationships between the text and the listener. But communication is—I mean—it's a really tricky subject in music, I think. I'm more and more interested in, you know, putting some sort of statement out there as an artist, but rather than communicating it kind of from a direct, you know, one-directional communication between myself and the listener, I'm interested in the listener reinterpreting the materials that I put out and making sense of them in an individual way rather than kind of figuring out every decision that I've made and what it means. So, which I think you can still talk about that as communication, but it's a difficult... difficult topic in music, I think.
I bet, yes. Now, maybe we can give our listeners a chance to interpret or reinterpret some of these sounds. Especially, you know, I wanted to really expand on this notion that composers, you know, we have this kind of like romantic ideals of composers sitting in alone in a room with a big piano and writing music to themselves about, you know, their individual torments or whatever else. I think that for you as a media artist, as an electroacoustic composer, as an acoustic composer, some of these elements are really intertwined. And I was going to suggest that maybe we can play a piece which would be probably at the heart of this conversation about sound and spaces.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any way...
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, maybe you can introduce This Is Feelings I'm Too Tired For by Adam Bessant. Is there anything you want to say before we play it?
This is a piece for bass clarinet and electronics. It's performed by Krista Martins on bass clarinet, and it was inspired by an image, a description of a saxophone player who was my friend saw this saxophone player in Vancouver. His name is Steve Lehman, the saxophone player, and he was part of an Anthony Braxton kind of installation with live musicians at the Roundhouse, and somebody described this image of this saxophone player, Steve Lehman, playing against a wall, like just alone, just improvising against the wall, and that image is really the genesis of the composition, and it's kind of my imagining of this image, a person playing against a wall and the sound bouncing back from the wall. So that's kind of the idea behind the piece in a way.
Okay, feelings I'm too tired for Adam Basanta. And we will be back in about 8.5 minutes to finish off our conversation with Jennifer Schein and Adam Basanta on CITR 101.9 FM. Feelings I'm too tired for, Adam Basanta. Thank you, Adam, for letting us hear this piece.
A pleasure.
Now, both of you will be presenting a work called When You're Looking for Something, All You Can Find Is Yourself as part of the program. Let me ask this tongue-in-cheek question then. Does the search to find yourselves continue still?
It does for me.
I think all of us are kind of on the same page, aren't we? What do you think, Jennifer? Does the search continue?
No, I've already found myself.
Oh, wow.
There
you
go.
You can reach Jennifer at this email. No. So from what I understand, music from the New Wilderness is kind of a double entendre. It's both music for transforming landscapes and a kind of new innovative way of approaching art and experimental practice. So I was wondering, what is next for you two in the New Wilderness? Maybe Jennifer can go first.
What do you mean by the New Wilderness?
Well, I suppose you'll have to respond to either one of the meanings from the double entendre, or maybe there's only a single entendre, I don't know.
Where will I be going?
What's next for you?
Am I preparing for the apocalypse?
Are you? Well, if you found the search for yourself, then I guess you're ready, right?
I'm recruiting members. Adam, you're part of the team.
Oh, okay, thanks.
I guess I just keep trying to go back to the Broughton to do work, because that's, and you'll hear in the piece, that's now one of my homes. So I'm torn between these two worlds, in the piece and in real life, and I just want to keep going back there and creating projects so I have a means to be up there, because there are really no jobs unless you're in the tourism industry.
And Adam, for you, what comes next after music from the New Wilderness?
I'll be coming to Vancouver for the premiere and a few of the other nights of the performances. After that, I will be at the Cluster New Music Festival in Winnipeg, March 1st to 10th. I'll have a few installations there and a premiere of a new work. And I'm working towards a CD release in April on a record label in Montreal called the Colin Stoff, K-O-H-L-E-N-S-T-O-F-F Records. So busy 6 months ahead as usual, and that's where you can find my work in the next few months.
Okay. Maybe this is a good time to ask if, you know, I'm sure there are many listeners who are very curious about both the music from the New Wilderness and your own individual work. Jennifer, Adam, how can we get to learn more about you? Adam?
Probably the best place for me is adambasanta.com, or just Google Adam Basanta. I'm the only one. You can find sort of what I'm up to next, and a lot of my compositions and videos and stuff like that. And of course, the music for the New Wilderness in Vancouver, there are four or five concerts, so I hope listeners are coming to their concerts as well.
Oh, I hope so too. I will be there on opening night. Maybe front row. maybe not, because seemingly the tickets are going really fast. So perhaps we can give our audience a final sample of this work that you'll be presenting on our way out. What would you like to play? Jennifer? Or Adam?
No. Go for it, Adam.
Well, I mean, we can play an excerpt from the piece, certainly. I'm not really sure which part, but there are three kind of sections. One that kind of explores a little bit my experiences of the Broughton, one that explores Jenny's experience of the Broughton as somebody who kind of has come back and is kind of splitting her time between, you know, the Broughton and Vancouver. And then Billy Proctor, which is the last section, where sort of the way that he relates to the Broughton as a place that he's always lived in. So I'm not sure which part you'd like to play, but that's kind of the general structure of the piece.
Okay, well, let's start it from the beginning, and
sure.
I suppose we'll
that'll be more me.
Okay, we'll play just a few minutes. Besides that, we have GAC coming on at 7 p.m. with Exploding Head Movies, so be sure to stay tuned for that. This is When You're Looking for Something, All You Can Find Is Yourself. Suppose this is also a good time to, thank you for listening. This has been 433, a program dedicated to new music with your host, Gregory Gann. And I wanted to thank Adam Basanta and Jennifer Schein for appearing on the program, graciously gracing the CITR airwaves. It's been a privilege to talk to you both about your work, and you will be able to hear this composition as part of Music from the New Wilderness. This will happen between February 11th and the 15th at the Culch, the Vancouver Cultural Center. If you have any questions about this show, 433, you can email me at theoryofhappiness@yahoo.com or connect to my Twitter page, CITR_433. Thank you, Adam and Jennifer, and thank you for listening. Oh.